You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, along strict party lines, Jerry Nadler's Judicial Committee has voted to impeach President Trump on two articles of impeachment.
Well, of course, we both know that that's just ridiculous. Did you happen to see the recent interview with Chris Wallace with former and fired acting, actually not acting, but the director of the FBI, James Comey?
Well, I actually think it was acting in some ways, but I did not see it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm not a fan of Chris Wallace. I've told you that many times. I think he's a never-Trumper that works on Fox. But I will tell you that it was a very good interview. It was a pressing interview, and it was very intense for Comey. And I'll tell you what. That guy should not play poker because he doesn't lie well. And you got to figure that either he's lying or he's got to be probably one of the biggest idiot FBI directors we've ever seen that had no idea that any of this was going on with regards to FISA abuses. It takes no responsibility. He takes responsibility in that he says, well, I apologize and I was smart. I was sorry about this and that. And I've got a bunch of things that he's sorry about because I wrote it all down. But come on, you're the director of the FBI. This is a pressing investigation against the sitting president of the United States, and you don't know what's going on in your own FBI?
Well, I think that that's absolutely dishonest. I mean, I think he knew everything that was going on to the nth degree, and I think that he is a complete narcissist who thinks that he can get away with everything and that people believe him. And people don't believe him.
Well, you know, when you go in the dictionary and you look up the word arrogant under A, you find his picture there.
I think
okay.
So.
I mean, that I can't stand the guy. And I just can't believe the lengths that he goes to try to fool the American people. But anyway, let me tell you what he's admitted to, because he says he wants to be transparent. Go figure.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Well, where was this transparency last year and the year before?
Oh, it wasn't there. As a matter of fact, he backed the FBI 100%, and Chris Wallace took him on that. They had pulled up all of his prior interviews with the press, and he kept slamming them with these different interviews. Okay, well, that's what you said 2 years ago, and that's what you said last year. What are you saying now? So he's actually admitted that he was wrong. And he describes himself as being overconfident in his defense of the FBI's surveillance process during the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, known as FISA. He admits to 17 seriously deficient procedures in the FBI's continued FISA application on Carter Page. He admits that the FBI didn't give the FISA judges accurate or correct information when they were applying and replying for the FISA warrants. By the way, he admits to signing three of those warrants. So a guy that knows nothing about what's going on didn't have any problem signing three FISA warrants against someone in the Trump's campaign, which was Carter Page. And then speaking of Carter Page, he admits that Carter Page was treated unfairly by the FBI. And he admits that ultimately he was responsible for this entire debacle, even though he tried to, you know, cast blame in other areas. Okay, not me. I'm trying to be transparent, but it really wasn't me.
You know, it speaks to kind of what we're seeing in the country right now. There's just no end to the amount of hypocrisy and unethical behavior on the part of so many people in so many ways. And another example of that, Ron, besides this, which is, I mean, the whole FBI thing with the Strzok and the McCabe and
the Steele dossier everything.
I mean, they all knew what was going on. And to say differently is an absolute lie and is to believe that we, the American people, are all completely stupid.
Well, you know, it really angers me because the arrogance of this man knows no bounds. And so Chris Wallace appropriately brought up that President Trump, you know, they showed a clip of President Trump talking at one of his campaign gatherings, and he says, and so the FBI destroyed people's lives, and
yes.
he mentioned Carter Page appropriately, and then Comey said, well, what about Lisa Page's life? Okay, Lisa Page's life has been destroyed. I'm going, wait a minute. You know everything that's gone on with Lisa Page and all the text messages between her and her lover, who was married. They're both married, Peter Strzok. And you're still doubling down on Lisa Page and concerned about her career?
Well,
okay,
and
I mean, how can you do that?
And how dare Lisa Page come out and say that President Trump's tweets about her have caused her just, you know, mental anguish, and so she's suing President Trump for her therapy sessions that she has to go through. She caused this herself. She chose to enter into an affair, which is part of it,
right,
but also chose to enter into this entire corruption and coup against the president from the time, actually before he was even elected, where they had a plan to get rid of him before he was even elected. She knew about it. She was part of it. She's part of the FBI. She had an obligation to whistleblow on that. She did nothing, but she was an accomplice and complicit in the entire scheme to get rid of the president.
Right.
And the only thing that they're all sad about is that they got caught.
And she's an officer of the court, for God's sakes. So, you know, they're supposed to be ethical, and they're not ethical, and they were deceptive, and they got caught. And it was just simple as that, extremely embarrassing. And I'm telling you, any lawsuit against the president of the United States is going to go absolutely nowhere. She left the FBI prior to them firing her. She saw what happened to her boyfriend, and he got fired, you know, Strzok. And so she saw the writing on the wall, and she bailed so she wouldn't have to, you know, admit that she got fired from the Department of Justice and the FBI.
Nobody ruined any of these people's careers
except themselves.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%.
You know, just the crying and whining after the fact now is, you know, I have no sympathy for whatsoever. They made their bed, as my dad would say, and they have to lie in it. And that's the way that it is.
Well, you know, and then Comey takes on the current Attorney General, William Barr, who I really like, who I really think is trying to get into the deep state and trying to drain the swamp, as President Trump talks about. And he said that the FBI acted in an irresponsible manner. And he turns around, meaning Comey, and says that it was absolutely irresponsible for the Attorney General, William Barr, to say that the FBI had acted irresponsibly during the investigation after spending the first 35 minutes of Chris Wallace's interview, you know, basically eating crow and having to admit all of the things that I wrote down and I just mentioned to you. So, you know, this guy's the Attorney General of the United States. You're the fired former director of the FBI that you just admitted to at least now being aware of 17 gross, I mean, the least, and this comes from Horowitz, by the way, the Inspector General. He said in the least, it was egregiously negligent, and at the most, it was completely deceptive.
Well, I hope that there are criminal charges forthcoming on people. But, you know, this also goes back to me with the whole Hillary investigation, where they completely let her off when there really were ample evidence that everybody could see. When they defied court orders, when they did far more than anything that President Trump ever did, and they just completely let her off the hook. And with the Steele dossier, they knew that Hillary, her campaign, had paid for this. Doesn't that raise a red flag to anybody? I mean, you talk, when President Trump talks to Zelensky, you know, in the Ukraine, and you want to make a big deal about that. What about Hillary here? And what about the things that they did? It's just, everything is so topsy-turvy and incongruent to me. And I'm sure it is to the American people. We are all sick of that swamp there. and the partisanship, the favoritism, the just the unfairness of all of it. And I think that what the American people want to see, I know what I want to see, is I want to see fairness across the board, no matter what political party you are. But we are so divided, Ron, and I see this in everything, every day. Just, I mean, look at the impeachment hearing that was just done, and Jerry Nadler, you know, takes the vote. Everything is along party lines. It is not, there's not one Republican that votes with the Democrats. There's not one Democrat that votes with the Republicans. Everything is party line. Everything is about politics. Everything is about power. So, because what is politics? It's the power over the people and the decisions and how this country is run, right?
Well, you know, I think you made some really good points, and I agree with every single thing you said with regards to what the motivations are for this entire thing. You know, and I'm remembering that Adam Schiff just the other day said that the FBI had conducted a serious and vigorous vetting of the Steele dossier. And that was before, of course, Inspector General Horwitz's report found the 17 major problems with the FISA abuses and the use of the Steele dossier, which, as you correctly point out, was completely paid for by the Democratic Party, by the DNC and Hillary Clinton.
Right. Through, is that not Fusion... your first red flag?
I know, absolutely. The whole thing was paid for by Fusion GPS. And what really bothers me on so many levels, one of the levels is the 30,000 emails from Hillary Clinton,
yes,
the destruction of BlackBerries, of laptops, of the FBI, when they brought her in for an interview, not Mirandizing her, and allowing a percipient witness in the interview room, which I've never heard happen ever, mm-hmm, no recorded interviews, and they were just basically allowed to do whatever they wanted to do. How do you bring a person of interest into an FBI interview, which is potentially a criminal interview, not Mirandize that person, and then allow a percipient witness that you are going to interview later to be sitting in the interview and learning all the questions that they're going to ask you with another person of interest? I mean, it is just, it goes beyond the pale of ignorance and egregious negligence, and it gets into the entire issue, Linda, as you've correctly stated, about the deep state and the conspiracy and the collusion with the FBI being in bed with Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party.
I think that's exactly what it is, Ron, because all the things you just mentioned, which are out of the ordinary, which is not how business is done in the FBI nor in law enforcement, those things that happened on purpose, because there never was going to be a prosecution of Hillary Clinton, no matter what the evidence showed. So what they needed to do is, if the evidence showed something, they needed to bury that evidence. And that's what Hillary did with getting rid of all of her emails. That's what everybody did. When classified materials came out to have been spread around to Wiener's email, Abedin's email, When all those things happen, nothing happened to anybody.
That's right.
I mean, and you want to, and here's another example, just exactly what you just said about how things are supposed to happen. And you have this impeachment hearing in the Judicial Committee, and you have a witness then going from being a witness, getting up and interviewing other witnesses. I mean, what the heck?
Well, it's not only... It's not only a witness interviewing other witnesses. That witness, so to speak, which is not a fact witness, okay? They never called a fact witness, okay? These are people I perceived, I believed, I assumed. None of this is objective, which is factual. Everything is subjective. I perceived, I thought, I understood. Well, guess what? You understood poorly, incorrectly, but my point is, you get one witness who's a donor to the Democratic Party, who's a donor to Hillary Clinton, asking questions of other donors of the Democratic Party and donors of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's crazy. And I'll tell you what I see that I find very, very disturbing is, if you go on Twitter and you look at somebody's remark about something, so somebody's remark could be on the Democratic side about impeaching Trump, or it could be on the Republican side or the conservative side about that Trump shouldn't be impeached. The following rants and raves of all the people that reply to that, it is starkly different. It is one side against the other, and there's no middle ground anywhere. And it is either those people that don't care about anything or believe the lies that have been told and regurgitate what they have heard that was untrue but haven't taken the time to find out for themselves, and they're standing by that Trump should be impeached, okay, because this, and this, which may not even be facts, okay, and that's what's all over Twitter. Then you have the other side who say completely the opposite, that this is, you know, a farce and it's not right, and there's no middle ground. It really points out the divide in the American people.
Well, you know, let me tell you what my perception of this is going to be moving forward, okay? So they're going to be coming up to a vote. And I think the vote's going to be along party lines. I do believe that probably three Democrats are going to jump ship.
Well, one just defected to the Republican Party.
But that wasn't one of the two. So I think he's the third one. Now, the first two are not, there's no question that they're going to defect. But the third one definitely is going to defect.
In Congress, you're talking, right?
Yeah. In Congress. Okay. He's a Democrat, and he's going to go over to the Republican side. I think he's already spoken with the President of the United States, and he's completely disgusted with the whole thing, which is why he's jumping the Democratic ship. But I think what's going to happen is they're going to vote against party, along party lines, and then it's going to go to the Senate. So they're going to vote to impeach on two articles of impeachment in the Congress. Then it's going to go to the Senate. And they don't have the majority in the Senate, so that's going to be the end of that.
Well, it's going to be shut down.
But yeah, but here's my thing, Lynn, and I think you'll agree with me. There's another plan. Okay, so they're just going to open up Pandora's box, mm-hmm. and they're going to bring out something else. This will not stop. I think Trump is going to be elected. I think it's going to be an overwhelming win this next time because the American people are angry because nothing has happened except generated by President Trump. Nothing's happened through the Congress or the Senate, for that matter, since he's been elected to office. I think they're angry. We could be five times farther ahead in America than we are right now. They want that to stop. The Democrats are not going to stop. I think Trump's going to get elected. I think they're going to continue this thing. We are not ever going to see the end of it until Democrats are voted out of office.
I want to talk about that more. I'm going to grab you a cup of coffee, and I have things to say.
And I'm hot for it.
Spreading the outlaw truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, I'm coffeeed up, and what we were just talking about with the president, just look over at England right now. So in Britain, Boris Johnson's Conservative Party won 365 seats out of this 650-seat lower house, and the Labour Party only won 203 seats, and the rest went to smaller parties. The tide is turning, and I think that Democrats really need to be looking at that, and I could personally care less whether they look at it or not, because it matters. And what matters is that people don't want socialism. And the people in Britain voted for Brexit. Yes, it was a close vote, just as our election was a close vote. But you can't undo the vote of the majority of the people that voted. Both Brexit and both President Trump, they each won, And nobody wants to respect that on the other side. So in Britain, the Labour Party people were trying to undo the vote of the people, right?
Oh, that's exactly right.
And so, that's what's happening here.
Oh, no, I agree. And I think you raised up a couple of good points. Number one, I think this was a referendum as to whether Britain wanted to go down the socialist route of the European Union. That has been an abject failure. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at it in all the different levels. You look at it immigration. You look at it as the welfare system. You look at the catastrophic changes that have happened in Europe culturally. Bankrupt nations.
Yes.
Take a look at, I don't know whether it was Finland or Norway. I think it was Finland that just went bankrupt on their medical plan, which was like Medicare for all.
Sure.
It was the exact same plan. And I think this was like the fourth time that the Labour Party tried to overthrow Brexit. Right, the vote of the people. And by the way, the Conservative Party in Great Britain is referred to as the Tories. So Boris Johnson is the new prime minister, and he's a Tory. And what I think is going to be really cool is that he and President Trump are friends, and President Trump called him to congratulate him and said, let's start talking major trade. So I think that Great Britain is really going to see a rise in their economy as a direct result of any new trade deals that are worked out between the United States and Great Britain. I think that Great Britain is probably going to go back to the pound. We'll have to deal with the darn pound again now that I just got settled in with the euro, and now we're going to have to go back maybe to the pound.
Well, they do have to go back to their own. They still do have the pound, Ron, because I have clients in England, and I have to convert their money from the pound.
Okay, well, you're the trade maven, so you know all about the international trade. So you're telling me that they're on the pound and they're not on the euro?
Well, I'm just telling you that they also use the pound, because otherwise I wouldn't have to be doing this.
Okay, I get it.
What's interesting is that the Labour's manifesto in Britain...
I hate that word.
Yeah, well, it's a fact. Was very like the Green New Deal here. So they called it the Green Industrial Revolution, and it was eliminating most fossil fuels and kind of the same as Cortez wants over here. And people rejected that out of hand. So I think that, I think that that's good news for those of us who are more conservative and who want to see our society stay as our founders built it. So take heed, because all the things that the Democrats are doing right now out of their hatred is really, there's something to the saying blind hatred, right?
Oh, I agree.
It's making them blind too.
I absolutely agree. And I can't see a viable candidate in the Democratic Party.
I don't either.
I don't see it. It's not, I don't think it's Biden. I think he's a hanger-oner. I don't think Bloomberg's gonna put the numbers together.
No.
I don't think there's some dark horse that's gonna come out of the woodwork.
Well, Hillary's still talking about it.
Oh, come on, Hillary. Jesus. Go away, Hillary. Go away. Even the demos want her to leave. And nobody else has got the numbers. I think Bernie Sanders, I don't think he's going to make it. I think he's going to fail. And I think Elizabeth Warren is actually going to be ahead of him. But isn't she now dropping in the
polls?
She's
dropping in the polls.
See, so who's going to step up?
We have a while to go. And we have a long while to go in a political calendar, right? So there's a lot of changes that could happen. Somebody else could come in. Hillary is making a lot of noise that people are begging her. I don't think she'll get in. I think she desperately wants to get in. I think it's too late. I think it's just too late. So we're kind of stuck with what we've got. And Biden has said confidentially, but it came out, that he was only going to be a one-term president.
Well, when he finished, let's say he were to get elected, okay, he'll be 82 by the time the next election rolls around in 2024. This guy is not going to have the stamina. And speaking of stamina and speaking of candidates and quality of candidates, after me just saying I don't think the Dems have a viable candidate in the whole group, the Republicans last time around, when it was Hillary against I think we had 17 Republicans that ran.
Yeah, we did.
Okay, and those were pretty good candidates. I mean,
they were very strong candidates,
right?
Yes.
Okay, so we agree. And Trump kicked all their butts. So what do you think he's going to do to what's left on the Democratic side once it gets down to debating and everything? I think he's going to clean house. I don't want to be overconfident, but here's what I'm counting on. I'm counting on the frustration of the American people being so angry that the country as a whole has not moved forward. And I personally think relationships between people and between races and different groups is the worst I've seen in 60 years.
Well,
okay?
And I think a lot of that to Obama.
Relationships, well, at least, okay, and here's my view, not only from the media, but what I see in just day-to-day interactions, watching interactions between other people of different colors, I just see so much distrust. You see the police in the community relationship is some of the lowest that I've seen, but that is misrepresented by the media as well.
I think it's media caused. Oh gosh, this is just a huge subject. There's so many things in what you just said. As far as the race relations, that is fed and fueled by the media.
Oh, it is.
Because you and I travel all over the place all the time. We're always having to go here or there. And what we see in society, in everyday society, in people that we come across, it doesn't matter what color they are. Everybody seems to be getting along just fine. They are making a race war that isn't really there. I mean, it might be there in some people, and that's a whole discussion that I would love to have, because that discussion in and of itself is going to take a while, about the people that are involved in that race war. These are the people that are disenfranchised, that were brought up in a bad way, homes that had no two parents, or maybe even no parent there at all. People that have suffered in different ways in their childhood and were brought up, you know, I'm for lack of a better word, poorly, and are angry people. Those people might be part of the race war, and they want to blame race.
You know, I don't disagree, and I think what you just brought up, I mean, this subject that we're talking about right now, we could do a whole another coffee conversation mm-hmm. over this. But you know, I have to agree with you, okay? So maybe I went off the deep end a little bit. But, you know, one of the things that I thought was fascinating when they say that, and we're talking about those disenfranchised people or those haters or whatever, they say, well, you know, they're being held back, Well, the other night, we had the pleasure of attending our daughter-in-law's graduation.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In San Antonio, Texas, which is, I mean, you can't think of a more blended community than San Antonio, Texas. All right. And she graduated from Our Lady of the Lake University with her master's in business and administration with as emphasis in finance. And I was just amazed and I was overjoyed. Would you not say that 95% of those hundreds of graduates at the doctoral, at the master's, and at the bachelor level were minorities, were
Absolutely.
All people of color.
Absolutely.
And as far as women are concerned, I think that 90% of all the graduates that I saw were women. Am I wrong about that?
Well, it had to be somewhere between 80% and 90%. The majority certainly were women. In fact, I know that I commented on it to you while we were there.
Right.
And we noticed as we walked into the venue, we noticed that really we were one of the only white families walking in.
Exactly,
okay?
Yeah.
And it was, first of all, the camaraderie in there, the people that sat around us were all different races.
And everybody was getting along.
All different cultures as well.
Absolutely.
And
everybody was getting along.
Everybody was thoughtful and
happy.
Yes. And then we also just hosted a holiday event. And the holiday event had the same type of mix. Okay.
Oh, everybody that works for our two different companies are of every race, mm-hmm. Every religion.
Yes.
I mean, you name it. We had 35 people there. And I'm telling you what a great group. We're so blessed to work with all those people.
Well,
are we
absolutely
not?
Are. But the point is that I don't see in my day-to-day life, and I'm everywhere. I'm between different states as you are. I'm in different offices. I'm in different venues. I'm here and there, and so are you. And we just don't see the racial strife between people that the media would lead you to believe that there is.
Right.
Okay. I also want to say one more thing about President Trump, because as he's going through all this, and I say this all the time, and I don't want to be a broken record, but it's just worth repeating, that he continues to work for the American people, not for himself, as Nadler kept saying in the impeachment hearings, that he was doing things for his own self. There's nothing he does for himself. He works for the American people. He's not benefiting in any way other than maybe the joy of giving, because he would be benefiting more having stayed in his own company.
Of course.
But, you know, he just made a first-part deal with China. And he said this all along, and I said it too. You have to hold on, hold on, hold on. Don't rush this. You have to wait to make the discomfort enough to make them act. And now they are getting uncomfortable enough to accept some things that are good for both of our countries. So part one of a deal is just happened. And of course you have the naysayers. Oh, that's not enough. And that's not going to help the farmers. And they lost this much and they only gained this much. Well, that's not true. And again, it's the misinformation that's put out by people, but China has agreed to $50 billion of
farmers.
Soybeans.
That's just to begin.
Just the beginning. This is, again, part one. It's not a done deal. The other thing is that China took their tariffs off of our soybeans and some of our farm goods, and President Trump did not impose more tariffs on their products. So it's a win-win right now for everybody. It's just step one, but he continues to move this country forward despite all of the mud and the crap that people throw at him.
Well, you know, and I love having these conversations with you, Lynn, because you know, international trade is your thing. And you said to me, and we had one of these conversations last year when all of this was coming up, and you said to me, we are going to have to put up with a little bit of pain to get a lot more gain.
Yes.
And don't be impatient. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you were just right on the money with that. I mean, you couldn't have been more correct. And then also, of course, now we have the USMCA.
Yes.
Right? The trade agreement. I think Mexico is kind of complaining about one aspect of it, but I think that's going to go away. But that is going to be a tremendous improvement, not only for the United States in trade relations, but with also our neighbors to the south, Mexico, and our neighbors to the north, Canada. Oh. And the Canadians are hurting right now. So this is going to help three of these countries.
This is very important for, as you say, all three countries. And it's going to deliver the things that NAFTA didn't deliver, and it's got some extra added benefits. And right now, it promises to create up to 589,000 new jobs here in America, and also it will lift wages for American workers. It will make us more competitive. So there's so many good things. The other thing that I think that nobody has said, and I haven't really seen it in the news, that there's a lot of environmental provisions inside of this agreement.
Oh, I'm not aware of that.
And okay. Some of the things that, like different types of poaching, you know, how you have animal poachers that poach elephants for their tusks and
right.
rhinos and that type of thing. I mean, there's lots of provisions in there for additional penalties against them and additional ways to fight those types of, you know, just egregious acts against
nature.
Our environment.
Right.
Yeah.
Against nature, yeah.
So I think that this agreement is just a wonderful win. And look at both of these wins in the very week that they are attempting to impeach President Trump.
And, you know, and we had that conversation just very recently that this, you know, they go to the Democrats, they go to the focus groups, and they try to find what word or what phrase is going to resonate negatively with the American people. And, of course, the new phrase, as you indicated, that everybody was parroting was Trump put himself before the country. But I think this just makes them look like fools, because everything that President Trump, like you said, is trying to do moves the country forward. And
right.
They're the only people holding the country back.
Right. And one of the things that this agreement does is it addresses wildlife trafficking, which happens over all of our borders. And, you know, it could be snakes or birds or monkeys or whatever it is. And do you know that that illicit trade is between $7 billion and $23 billion a year?
I had no
idea. It's the fourth most lucrative global crime in the world.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So the impacts of this trade agreement are very far-reaching, and that it also impacts the trafficking of human beings.
Well, that's something that you and I have talked about so many times. Hey, listen, let's grab a cup of coffee, and I want to talk about blue bias. And I want to talk about the tragedy of our officers being killed during this past month.
Okay.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
You know, Linda, I've got a couple of things I want to talk with you about that just really bother me at this time of the year. And right now, we are just seeing that people are shooting and or killing our officers left and right.
Yes.
And I'm really concerned about that. This time of the year, I get concerned about that. I mean, of course, every single day I'm concerned about it. But there are certain times of the year where we lose officers in increasing numbers, and this just happens to be one of those times of the year. And I said that at this particular time of the year, we would lose at least as many officers this year as we did last year. And I said, I think this year we'll even lose more. And so far, we're definitely on track to do that. And so right now, we've lost 49 officers, and I think we've lost 7 officers in the last week and a half.
All right. And almost an officer. It's been a bad couple of weeks.
Exactly. And almost an officer a day. And but throughout the year, we've lost an officer a week. I mean, and that's, I mean, 1 week after another. I mean, when you average it out, we've lost one officer per week. And that's horrible. The statistics, which bother me, And then all of these statistics come from the Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. One of the things that I've been trying to get them to do is to start tracking officers that are shot and wounded along with officers that are shot and killed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so firearm officer-related deaths are just about the same as they were this time last year. But I think if we look at officers shot and injured, that's going to be way up. So, you know, so this is a very dangerous time of the year for our officers. And, you know, we have a police officer son, and I worry about that young man every single day. The other thing that bothers me is this blue bias against law enforcement? Where does this hatred for law enforcement come from? And I'm going to call out Starbucks. And it's not the first time I've dealt with Starbucks and been angry about the vicious, hateful corporate culture of Starbucks, where they are refusing to serve deputies, or they write pig on a coffee cup or something like that. And the most recent one comes from Riverside, California, of which we have a Martinelli and Associates office in Riverside County, California. And they had two Riverside County deputy sheriffs that went into a local Starbucks, and the barista there refused to serve them. The officers were very gentlemanly about it. They were extremely disappointed. They didn't cause a stir. They just left. And this has got to stop.
Well, it's absolutely despicable. And I didn't read the story about Riverside, so my curiosity would say, were those employees disciplined, or did what was their action supported? And if it was supported, then something really has to be done here, because who do you think that Starbucks employees are going to call if somebody walks into their establishment and starts a fight or robs them or anything else that could go down in there? They're going to call the cops to come and help them. And, you know, this is just wrong to treat law enforcement this way. There's a number of places across the country that are doing this. I think a lot of this, Ron, is the media that's doing this. And it's also these very, I don't know what you want to call them, progressive people that have put out the word, the false word, that police are
the
killing,
bad guys.
Yeah, that they're the killing guys. People, that they're hurting people, that they're racist, that they're doing this. The statistics don't prove that at all.
And, you know, when I wrote my book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police on Amazon, which has become a very, very popular book, I put all the real statistics in that book. And everything that you hear from Black Lives Matter and all the new progressive left and these ridiculous politicians on the Democratic Party that talk about officer violence against people of color and minority community, and especially against Black Americans, that is absolutely false. Absolutely false. As a matter of fact, the real statistic is that people of color kill police officers 9 times at the rate that police officers kill them. 9 times. People of color, specifically Black people, more Black males are killed by other Black males by far, far and away than police officers kill Black males. More Black males are killed by other Black males in justifiable self-defense cases than police officers who kill Black males. But you never hear that from Black Lives Matter. You never hear that from the media. You never hear that from the new progressive left. And that's all in that book. And this is the type of false narratives that are thrown out there, just like one of my cases, which was Michael Brown that I analyzed. It's in the book. And hands up, don't shoot. You hear hands up, don't shoot all the time. Hands up, don't shoot was a lie. Hands up, don't shoot never happened. And the people that told the FBI or the police investigators initially, before the FBI got into the case, that said that Michael Brown had his hands up when he was shot by Officer Darren Wilson, had to recant all their statements or face criminal prosecution for lying to police officers during the course of an investigation.
But not only did they not get in trouble for that, Ron, they actually got immunity and given a job for the city or somewhere there.
That's right. That's exactly right.
It's just ridiculous. With the hundreds of thousands of contacts that police officers make in communities.
Millions, Linda. Millions. Tens of millions of contacts a month that law enforcement has with the public, approximately 1 to 2% only of all those contacts ever resort in any use of force, even the lowest level of use of force, like maybe a physical control hold on someone like that, let alone shootings. It's absolutely insane. But this has got to stop. This blue bias, this prejudice against law enforcement, the not serving law enforcement officers in restaurants, in coffee shops, in stores when they're out there shopping, in uniform, with their families, this has got to stop. But also, this is a call out to law enforcement. You have to stick up for your rights. Your police officer associations, your deputy sheriff's associations, they, Linda, are the people that have to speak up. Chiefs of police have got to speak up. Sheriffs have got to speak up, because we can't sue these companies like Starbucks, because unfortunately law enforcement is not a protected class. It's not like they're that they're people of color, they are part of the LGBT community, they're some sort of religious or cultural protection assigned. There is nothing assigned to law enforcement officers, and this, Linda, is where state legislators and governors have got to get involved and create legislation that deals with discrimination against law enforcement officers.
Well, unfortunately, it's going in the opposite direction, where they're actually supporting discrimination against law enforcement officers.
Exactly.
And, yeah, I agree with you, Ron. It's pretty despicable. We just had an officer executed, shot with 10 or 15 times in the back of his head, in a vehicle, and
sitting in his patrol car in Arkansas in the police parking lot, and a guy that had a lot of contacts over the internet with anti-law enforcement groups out of nowhere came up on this officer, this poor innocent officer who wasn't even aware of his presence, and shot him 10 times in the head and killed him and was arrested. And that person deserves the electric chair.
Oh, absolutely. It is just, it's very frustrating to watch. And I know that communities and people across the country feel the same as we feel about that. Unfortunately, what we don't hear is outrage from the media to, you know, share this amongst the country. They either bury the story, or they make it, you know, some back page thing, and they don't make it a big deal that we're treating our officers this way. People just really need to imagine what would happen in this country without law enforcement to protect them, to protect their rights, to be the ones that call and go into the fight instead of away from the fight. We need them, and these are good, good people. We've known them all of our lives, in places, in different cities and different states. They are, far and away, the vast majority, wonderful, wonderful people. You get a few bad eggs in any type of job, anywhere.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't think, Linda, the general public knows that of all the professions, law enforcement gets the least number of complaints and is the most accountable to citizen complaints by the public, okay? So you take a look at judges, and you take a look at the commissions on judicial review. They get more complaints than police officers do. Attorneys,
by
far, get more complaints than police officers do. Doctors get by far more complaints than police officers do. Teachers, oh my God, they are at the bottom of the barrel as far as complaints. Okay, police officers are the most credible, the most accountable, the most transparent, the ones that receive, of all the professions, the least amount, statistically, the least amount of complaints in consideration of the millions and millions and millions of contacts that they have every single year. We have to remember that we have about 900,000 law enforcement officers in the United States, for God's sakes. And out of the 900,000, there's probably about 500,000 to 600,000 that are actively engaged in street patrol or investigations.
So when people vote, and they vote in people in city councils and positions that would be likely to affect the lives of police officers, or that would be choosing a police chief or choosing a police board or something to related to law enforcement. They need to vote in people that are pro-law enforcement, because what's happening is we have a lot of places voting in people that are not pro-law enforcement, and therefore they change the rules. They make it very difficult for officers to do their jobs. That just endangers the communities. It endangers the lives of everybody in the community that they serve when they don't allow them to do their jobs.
You know, and I agree entirely. And all you have to do is just track some of these cities.
Well, look
at
New York.
Well,
perfect example.
Look at the crime rates that go up when you are not supportive of law enforcement. And it really bothers me, because one of the Democratic, the newest guy that just jumped into the fray on the Democratic side, Michael Bloomberg, a former mayor of New York under Giuliani, and I think Bernard Kerik, and also the chief, the famous chief that left New York City, the police commissioner. He wasn't a chief, he was a police commissioner, and went to L.A., okay. LAPD. Anyway, he said that he now apologizes for instituting stop and frisk. My God, stop and frisk was the thing that saved the city of New York from just becoming a total cesspool crime-wise. Remember, you couldn't even go into Times Square with all the drug dealing and the prostitution and the gangs and the murder rates and all of those things that happened. How does do the people in New York City, how do they think that that town became... in that area, like Times Square and all those big tourist areas, how the hell did they think those areas got to be as safe as they are?
Okay? Well, and we've lived through those times when it was kind of a cesspool, and also after Giuliani when it became really a place that you could walk around, and we do it all the time there, and feel very safe there. Right. I mean, I don't go on all the side streets and everything, but I will walk around downtown for sure in Manhattan.
And you know what? Speaking of big cities, you and I do business from time to time in Chicago, and we are occasionally talking about the huge murder rate in Chicago, and how did the police begin to resolve that? And it was stop and frisk. And now they've got this new mayor, and the one that just fired the police
lady,
superintendent, mm-hmm. and of course he was worthless. But now that crime rate is going back up. So when you handcuff the police, when you have an anti-law enforcement mentality, the crime is going to go up, because the morale of the police, first of all, you handcuff them so they can't do reasonable suspicion, investigative detentions, and Terry stops, as we call it, searching for weapons with reasonable suspicion. When you throw that out, you're going to have people, carrying guns. And when they carry guns and when they shoot people and they're not adjudicated properly and they're turned around and released back into society, then you're going to have problems. And when you have illegal alien criminals that law enforcement is told by politicians that they are not going to cooperate with ICE, and those people are released from custody back into the community when they're illegal and they need to be picked up by ICE and deported, that's where your crime rate goes up. And that's why you have people like Kate Steinle in San Francisco that was brutally murdered by an illegal alien who was subsequently acquitted, okay,
well,
with a stolen gun from a federal law enforcement officer.
Right. And I don't have the stats now, but we should probably talk about it again, where we've talked about the stats before as to how many crimes are committed by illegal aliens, but also you were just talking about adjudication, which is a big deal to me, because the criminals that are arrested that are being released is just ridiculous, and I just have a big beef with that, because they just come back out and they hurt somebody else. And you have this rapper who just killed a female police officer,
police
by
sergeant,
running her over with his car.
Exactly.
He gets arrested and he gets out on bail, or he is issued bail, right, for $150,000,
right,
which is $15,000. Okay,
that's right.
It's all that you have to put up for that.
And he had the money to get out. He
sure.
really did, because he's
go.
A drug dealer. You know, he's always showing money with him with automatic weapons and money, and he doesn't have a job. So, but thank God, another judge stepped in mm-hmm. and stopped this murderer and this coward from being released. This poor female sergeant. Who was well known in her community, and she dies at the hands of some gang-banging 21-year-old rapper.
Right.
You know, it's just
right.
absolutely disgraceful.
And there's not a question. It's not like nobody saw it.
It happened right in front of a whole bunch of officers.
So it's not. There's not a question that, well, maybe he's innocent. No, he's not innocent.
No, he actually had, I think it was one of her handcuffs still attached to his wrist when he broke away from her and got into his car and then spun that car around and ran her down.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I want to talk about more of this in the future, but I think you would agree with me that people have just got to have a no-tolerance policy against this blue bias and this anti-law enforcement sentiment out there.
Well, I absolutely agree. And as much as I like Starbucks coffee, you know, based on what is happening with them, again, I'm going to have to go back to my just boycotting them personally, because I can't agree with that and I can't abide by it. And it's the only way that I can say something about it.
Well, you know what? I'm with you. I don't like Starbucks anyway. I'm going to maintain my boycott with them. But this is part of the corporate culture. I am tired about hearing that Starbucks is apologizing. I want to hear from the top dog of Starbucks. I don't remember what his name is, but he has got to take personal responsibility for this. And there has to be Starbucks-wide training in the United States, that this will not be tolerated, and people will not just be suspended, but they will be terminated
yes,
for showing this discrimination against law enforcement.
Yes.